Well, good evening. It is April 17th, 2013, and tonight we're going to talk a little bit about, the title is Where is God When It Hurts? And I, some time ago, read a book by Philip Yancey with the same title, Where is God When It Hurts? And I certainly encourage you to read that book. It helped me to grow in my perspective on some of these weighty matters of faith and life on this planet and what happens, you know, when really bad things go on. Where did God go? And I just want to share a couple of things with us to kind of refresh our hearts and to guide us truly in the right direction in terms of answering any questions. I'm going to read something right now, and I am going to read it, that I wrote right after the terrorist attacks on 9/11. It was a speech that I had to make in a number of places, but I'm not going to read all of it, just some excerpts. And I'm doing that in the light of what happened this past Monday up in Boston at the Boston Marathon bombings. And it kind of comes around again every time you have one of these school shootings or something going on. That question so frequently comes up, where was God? Where was he in all this? Where is he when we hurt? And so I just wanted to just tell you some things that I reviewed this and just wanted to share some things with you, and some of the excerpts that I did on the speech from Where Was God on September 11th, 2001. And I commented that many lives, innocent lives, were senselessly lost by the acts of darkness and evil, stirred truly from the pit of hell and not from the pinnacle of heaven. And in regards to September 11th, our lives were really changed that day and forever. Our pristine land, never before defiled by an enemy's dirty hand, had now plunged into the cauldron of history with all the other countries so devastated from outside their own borders. An enemy that had the unmitigated gall to use the very system of freedom it so intensely hates to actually walk, talk, live, and learn amongst the very lambs it intended to slaughter. Was God surprised then? Was he caught off guard? Where was God on that fateful Tuesday morning, September 11th, 2001? I submit to you that he was where he has always been. It says in the Bible in Deuteronomy 30:14, that the word of God is nigh thee, meaning near you. It is nigh thee in your mouth. It's meaning, because it's near you, it means not in the heavens or out in the sea or beyond your reach. That's what that comment is for. God is not beyond your reach. He's near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may observe it. And that statement is, again, repeated in Romans 10:8, if you want to look those things up. So where was he then? Where was he when massacres happened? Where was God when the Boston bombings happened at the marathon last Monday? He was right in front of us for our choosing. Some are angry with God, and it's really all right to question him, you know, but not with a clenched fist. We must also remember that he was right there at ground zero for that act of atrocity back in 2001. And I'm reminded of this, and I remember when I wrote this, what I understood. People say, where was God? I want us to listen just a couple of facts about that day in 2001. The Twin Towers is a workplace for about 50,000 people, yet only about 20,000 were inside. Now, to me, that's the mercy of God. Jetliners could hold over 1,000 passengers, but only a few hundred were on board. The Pentagon was not destroyed. The Capitol was not hit. So I think God was very busy, very active, and very present on 9/11/2001. And I went on in another part of that speech to say, speaking about, we always call out to God, but I want us to listen. We have far too long been asleep. We must be full of the Holy Spirit of God to be ever ready to give an answer to those who still grope in the darkness. We must be awake and alert to the stirrings of God to be a light, a beacon in the darkness of a very sin-sick world. We need to exude His strength and joy. We need to have a love for our lives, our families, our church, our community, and our wonderful country. A passion for patriotism not based on political ideation, but on the truth of the holy scriptural foundation of the United States of America. This is a land where God directed our founding fathers to develop a type of government that would allow all people of different backgrounds to be able to peacefully coexist and melt into one nation. But God never intended for the Christian foundation to disappear into the soup. The Christian foundation is actually the pot of the melting pot. If it melts too, we're going to lose the whole stew. Mm. The faith of our founding fathers must not get lost in our quest for equality and fairness. If we evolve into a society with no boundaries, we fall the way of doom. If we are all right and philosophies are all equal, we are on the road to anarchy. That is the chaos that is the playground of Satan, the evil one. Our great God is a God of order. He set up a government of law and order, but it was set up on the ancient codes, his moral codes, that have brought us our successes so far. We need to know of the faith-based foundation of our country and need to be part of those who stand up to maintain it. And then I went on to say, prayer, praise, honoring God openly in our homes, businesses, and public squares will bring the presence of God back into our midst. We must be filling our lives with his scriptures like never before, crying out to him to cleanse and lead our nation in his precepts. So I kind of brought that together to remind people in that most devastating day that happened on September 11th. There was a great outpouring to God. There was songs, God Bless America. I mean, everyone called out to God. But soon after that, it's, hey, where was God? How come this happened? All of that. But I don't want us to be discouraged, not with last Monday, not with what happened on 9/11, not which what might happen in the future. God is alive. He didn't go anywhere. And so I wrote, it's with a soaring heart and happy expectation of good that I look forward to these next days that face us in our nation. I look forward to teaching us stronger family values and the precepts of life from God. I look forward to bringing forth the truth of salvation to all who are unaware, and I look forward to America turning to the Lord and being a light to the world as God intended us to be, even if just, excuse me, for a short while. We have seen the light, we have the light of his life, and we must lift up that torch to pierce the darkness. And then I said, may God truly help us all. That was written at a time when there was an awful lot of confusion going on. Huge changes have occurred in our country since 9/11 in terms of security, in terms of requirements, in terms of restrictions. And so I just wanted you to to see that God was really there. He muted, he mitigated, he changed circumstances. There were stories that came out of 9/11 all over the place, how someone was caught in traffic and they didn't get there, how somebody this and that. God is moving chess pieces around according to his plan. And if anything is going to stop his plan, he is not going to allow it. But there are things, and we're going to cover this. I just want to give us a little reminder here tonight. There are things that happen to us on this earth, and it's not God punishing us, and it's not God holding his hand back. Some of it is, and some of it isn't. And for you to guess, you're going to be miserable. You have to hear from God, even in this regard, in terms of, God, where are you, what is this, and what's going on? Now, those things that I wrote, you know, where was God on September 11th, we could say the same thing, where is God when it hurts? Where is God when the things happen at the Boston, those brutal killings of the bomb blast this past Monday, just a couple of days ago. Also, if you are looking to the Lord and you truly trust the Lord, those things that I just spoke about, are you going to look to the Lord? Are you going to run from the Lord? Does that apply when you have a diagnosis of cancer? How about the loss of a job? We just love it when everything's going well and miracles are happening. I mean, everyone does that. How secure it feels when your wallet and your belly are full and no one is accosting you. Everyone, oh, bless you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. But oh, how quickly we are to turn on God and shake a fist at him when our idyllic setting takes a little turn for the worse. Now, we aren't unique in responding this way. When you go through the Old Testament, you'll see many, many accounts of God's chosen people just intensely trusting him, you know, when he's doing all the miracles. I mean, I bet there was a tremendous amount of trust in God when Moses held up that staff and those waters parted and they got across to the other side and escaped annihilation from the Egyptian army. Oh, I bet you they were praising God then. I bet you their trust level probably was off the scale. But unfortunately, if you read on, that was only temporary. And even after that greatness of that was done, even after the manna was given and the water was given in the desert and their shoes didn't wear out, that great trust in God gave way to grumbling and complaining. And in the grumbling and complaining is where the distrust started to creep back in. Now, are you like that? It's a question I have to ask. I'm not asking anyone personally here or anyone that's listening on the website, but you have to ask yourself these brutally honest questions. Are you like that? Do you only love God when everything's going well, and then you really doubt him and you're angry with him and oh, whatever's going on when things don't work out how you'd like them? You just have such a wrong perspective. And I just was stopping and thinking, it's sort of like a flow, you know, when everything's all well and things are going good, nothing's against you, this trust of God just flows, it just comes oozing out of you. But when things go badly, I just saw it's sort of like your trust clogs up faster than bacon grease hardening in the refrigerator, you know, clonk, that's it, no more flow for this, it's frozen. So I do understand that all of us in going through this it's a difficult journey, but it's a marvelous journey. Trusting God is easier said than done. We all know that. And God doesn't mean for it to be, you know, just some fluke that he's talking about that can't be done. But when things go wrong, there's always a huge question that's looming out there. Where is God when it hurts? Now, something that's very, very close to me is the Boston Marathon bombings. That just happened 2 days ago. It shocked us all, and all across the country. The shock and the disbelief and those things, they will linger for years for most people. For some, that's going to linger forever. Their lives are changed forever. To some, you may be close or far away from the community or being a runner or not a runner. It's going to fade, just like 9/11 faded. 9/11 hasn't faded for me. It hasn't faded for me. I understood what went on, and it stirs me all the more to seek God. And I am understanding that very often God will lift a hand of blessing off of things to stir us up, to get us in the right track. But it doesn't occur for everything, and people are wrong in saying God did that to punish you. I just heard today that some of I think it's the Foxborough Baptist Church that hangs around the funerals and you know, God hates you and everything's happening wrong because of the homosexuality in America and all that. Well, my gosh, you don't get out of Genesis there was homosexuality. That church acts like it's something new. God has set a standard of living and all sorts of relationships, not just homosexual relationships. God's not picking on one group. He also addresses adultery. Go read in Leviticus in chapter 18. It gives a whole list. You can't be with your aunts and your uncles and your nephews and your cousins. I mean, it goes on and on. God's talking about a purity in relationship. He's also talking about obedience. So there's a lot more that's going on here that people don't understand. This group is showing up at the funeral of that little 8-year-old.
Oh,
God. And saying, this happened to him because Massachusetts has okayed homosexual marriage. Can you imagine showing up with a sign? Now, there's a whole lot of atheists that are going to be turned off even more toward God. This is a merciful God who's not angry with the homosexuals. He's not angry with the drunkards and the carousers. He's not angry with the adulterers. But if they stay in their sin and remain unholy and unclean, they can't be with him. It's just as simple as that. But he's not angry with anyone or any one of us, no matter what form our sin takes. I just find that such a a derision of who our God is. God is not angry with Massachusetts. He's not angry. But if people continue in a way of death and destruction, they will not be with him. But he's going to continue to call them to the day they die because he loves us and he doesn't want anyone to perish. But he's perfectly good and just, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But anyways, about the Boston Marathon, it's personal for me. Now, for many people, I know where New York is, but I didn't know anybody up there. You know, I share in the grief and the sadness and the shock of the tragedy back then, but the personal connection to me in Boston is much greater. Boston's my hometown. And as I speak about Boston, I might even revert to my original language, which is Bostonian, and there isn't an R in it anywhere for 30 miles, you know, but Boston is my hometown. And I've been on Boylston Street many times, where that finish line is. I have stepped on that finish line. I didn't have the privilege of running the Boston Marathon, but after one of them, I was up visiting in Boston, and my brother Steve took me out. This marathon is such a tradition. It's part of the blood of us people up there in Boston. This past Monday was the 117th running of the Boston Marathon. This is in the heart and soul of the people that live up there. I actually walked on it. It's painted right on the street. It's not some sign that's up like most finish lines. It's painted right on the street. You can see where the finish line is. And all those precious people. So I know where Boylston Street is. I know where that finish line is. I've run a number of marathons, and I know the effort it takes to accomplish that. And I know the wonderful atmosphere that surrounds such a wonderful thing. There's many, many people at the finish line cheering. Not only the one they're waiting for, but they're cheering for the others, because running a marathon is a huge effort. And these people were out there. They weren't making a political statement. They weren't doing anything except a wonderful athletic event. And the horror that occurred to them. The whole running community is hurting. I on Facebook, things are bouncing off all over the place with all of my runner friends and the running group that I belong to. And my brother, Steve, was running the marathon that day. Now, usually there's other people in my family that run. It just so happens that it was only my brother, Steve. But many in my family were at the finish line area waiting for him to cross. And it was a pretty scary time for us all. I was originally texted by one of my family members on the news, and my heart sank. What? There was a bombing at the Boston Marathon? I was like, what? You know, it's like there was a bombing at a children's play. I mean, your mind can't even wrap around it. But I knew people that were going to be there at the finish line. And the person that texted me just said, turn on the news. They just heard it themselves. Now, of course, we're trying to text, we're trying to call, we're trying to get a hold of the people up there, but there wasn't any cell phone service. Most likely because of the volume, once I was on the news, you know, everyone's trying to call everyone that they know up there. But I tell you all that to let you know, just because I love the Lord with all my heart didn't mean that trusting Him was easy at that moment. We're going to come face to face with this at certain times. It's easy to trust God when it doesn't involve you. It's easy to trust God when everything's going well, but when it's hitting you, what are you going to do? This, where is God when it hurts, has just as much to do with us as it does with God. I struggled for a few moments with that because I couldn't get a hold of my family. Vain imaginations were kind of swirling around in my head, but I reached out to Jesus. And when I did, I said, God, this struck me. There's a shock that hit me, but I am calling out to you. Lord, have mercy on this situation. Those that are injured and all this stuff is flying around the news. God, I ask for your presence to make a difference here. And in that moment, I cannot explain it, and only anyone who has experienced this, it's not a mind over matter thing. It's not a positive moment of life and it's none of that. I felt a real peace and a settlement within me. And it, like I said, it's very hard to explain because I was still a bit anxious and puzzled, you know, really eager to find out if my family was okay. But something inside was like, it was like almost cool in there. It was like a cool sensation. And understanding that everything was okay. And it wasn't like in that moment I knew everyone was all right. I didn't know their condition. I didn't know if my brother was, because it was roughly the time frame that that he finishes when he's running a little faster. And boy, I tell you, I just didn't know. But this knowing wasn't, God didn't say they are okay. I didn't hear anything along that. I just had this deep peace within that even if the worst should happen, that everything would still be okay. And that sometimes is eventually, not at that moment. But and that is the best sensation, the best understanding, the best knowledge to have, because then you won't fall apart. And when things are hurting, you're going to know God is not far away. He is in control, and he does have a plan. To us, it looks like chaos. Just like I spent years and years in the military. And when you're at the lower ranks and the lower levels, when I came in as a second lieutenant, everything the majors and lieutenant colonels were doing looked like chaos. Why are you doing this? Why? Well, it wasn't until you learned and understood. Some of it was chaos because some of them were jerks, you know, but whatever. But most of it wasn't chaos. It just looked like that to me because I didn't have all the information until I got up the chain a little bit. Oh, that's why you do it that way. That's why you make those decisions. That just looked kind of crazy down here. And it's the same way with God, only on a much more magnificent, magnified scale. It looks like chaos down here, but it isn't to God. He knows exactly what he's doing and where he's coming and going and what's going to happen. That's the kind of peace I want in me, and that's the kind of peace I want in us all. And I sense that this is not the last of any kind of bombing in our country. We live in a dangerous world. These are probably going to be on the increase, and we better get down to practicing now. Fall on your knees and your face before God first, before you panic. God, help me. Let me know what it is that I am to do. But he has not gone anywhere, and when things are hurting and hard, God has not left the building. He is right there. Reach out to him and get that same kind of settlement in your heart. When that happened, something kept saying to me, just over and over in my mind, it was like, it's going to be okay. I trust you, Lord. It's going to be okay. In saying that first, what it did was that set me up to hear from God. That set me up to receive from God. I humbled myself and bent the knee of my heart and said, I call out to you, God. It's going to be okay because of you. Now, what that did, without me realizing it, it pushed that old devil right out of the way. When you are in God's presence, there are no vain imaginations from the adversary. There isn't. When you're in God's presence, you get everything that comes with God's presence. And it includes a peace that surpasses all understanding. And there's some of these accounts that are coming out in the news now of these people that just rushed right in. Runners as well as participants, the spectators, that went over to those that were wounded in this blast last Monday. And some of the stories coming out are absolutely marvelous. And one guy, this guy Tyler, I think his name is, you know, some military guy, this woman was bleeding and frightened and whatever, and she said, don't leave me, just stay here. And so he was talking to her, what's your name and all this stuff, and he said, he showed her his shrapnel wound from Afghanistan and said, look, it's going to be okay. They're going to fix you. You're going to be all right. And that helped her and calmed her enough because he looked at her. It wasn't like she had her leg cut off or something. Whatever wound she had, it was hard enough and bad enough. It's okay. She then was calm enough to tell him, you go help someone else because I am going to be okay, after he bandaged her and did whatever he did. Now, these are wonderful stories. And in him interviewing him later, he said, when I held her hand, he said it was spiritual. I didn't get into any details on that, but an immediate peace came into her. And I don't know where he was coming from in making that statement, but I do know what God has said. It's not some fleeting peace. This is a peace that surpasses all understanding that you can't explain in the midst of your storm and your trials and your struggle. And after I had kept saying in my mind, it's okay, Lord. I trust you, Lord. It's okay, Lord. The next day, I was reading a devotional, and it quoted Psalm 31:14. And in that, it said, but I trust in you, O Lord. I say you are my God. Well, I tell you, you can't trust in God unless you let him be your God. And then you have to continue to reiterate that to yourself, especially in times of troubles. But many times, people who are in the midst of great suffering, they want to love God and they want to look to him, but just can't get past the grief and the pain. And that's okay too, because that's part of our natural existence. They sometimes will, in that sensation of pain and grief and confusion. They'll often feel betrayed by God. They'll feel that God just left them hanging. Now, I've seen it as a chaplain in the military, as someone who works in the community, in addition to what I do here, I've just seen this, unfortunately, when there's tragedy and grief. You know, we all go and we visit, you know, like the intensive care units, we go to funerals. I mean, we all do this in our natural walk here. So we've all seen this, not just what I'm relating to you now. And when there's, at the height of pain, at the height of grief, at the height of loss, unfortunately, many church people only add to the confusion with some of the comments that they say. They're not looking to the Lord when they say these things. And these comments, hopefully they fall on deaf ears because the person's still in kind of shock. But anyone who's hearing this, they could really be confused. They say things like, God must have wanted your son more than you could want him. What a stupid thing to say to someone who just lost a kid. Or, God has a plan, and he allows your pain to help fix your sin nature. I mean, I've heard these things. I'll be standing talking to this one, I'll hear someone say that over there, I go, please, do not tell anyone what church you go to, because they'll never go to your church, wherever it is. You know, it's like, oh my God, the God that you're talking about serving, they don't want to serve it if you're going to talk like that. Such foolish and ignorant statements will never bind a soul to the Lord, but almost always drive them away. If they don't know him, they probably aren't interested. Now, don't be fearful for stupid statements that you say. If you mess it up, God will certainly give another opportunity for that individual to hear some of the truth. So when people ask, where is God when it hurts? We don't want to be part of the pain giving them a stupid answer. And sometimes we have to realize there just aren't any answers. Sometimes you just have to hold people in their pain. And we need to encourage ourselves and others to take solace in God, not his answers. A lot of people are angry and bitter, and they will be till they die, because they say, God did not answer my prayer. Well, sometimes God did, but his answer was no, and you don't like that. So God always does give an answer. We just don't like to hear what he says. So when we ask, where was God? I'd like to ask you. Yeah, you can say, where was God when people hurt? I want to ask you, where were you when someone is hurting? What part of the process do you play? Because we are what? We are the emissaries. We are the diplomats of God on earth. And if you let his flow come through you, it's going to be right. The only way that we can respond appropriately, and it's not like having a book in a psych class. The only way to respond appropriately when someone is hurting, when there's all sorts of stuff going on, when there's loss, etc., is to see, how did Jesus do that? Because he didn't live on some other planet, folks. He lived right here. And he lived in a time when tigers were eating the people in the village. He lived when the Romans were cutting off their heads and destroying people. He lived with the times of pagan temples were right there in front of you. And if you think the pornography is bad here, you should see what they're finding on the walls as these archaeologists dig up some of these things that have been buried for centuries. He lived in a very wicked world also. Wickedness is not new to 2013. So when we look over how Jesus approached things, he never told someone to just accept their lot in life. He was sensitive always to suffering. He used his power to heal, not hurt. He was often hesitant to intervene. He didn't jump on every single poor person, every fight, every divorce, every sin, every problem that there was out there. He just did what God told him to do and walked in peace the rest of the time. He didn't turn the world on its end to stop all pain. And this is amazing what I'm going to tell you right now. Instead, he entered into this pain and mess himself. Because Adam messed it up, God just didn't turn around and clean up his mess after him. God made a way for every single human being to be restored to him, to be cleansed. And that is in a blood life sacrifice that Jesus made. Jesus didn't try to explain a tragedy. He clearly did explain, though, that people didn't do anything unusual to deserve their fate. Because they said, "What? Remember that account in the scriptures? And the guy was blind from birth. And I said, who sinned? His father or whatever? I said, no one sinned. This is for the glory of God. We just do not understand God. He is not mean. He is not miserable. He does not taunt us. He does not tease us. He doesn't go, na, 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 na. The ideation that some people have who this God is has not come from God. It's come out of the pit of hell. Satan has distorted who God is. Deception is Satan's business. And he spent a lot of time distorting that. So much so that when evil, like what happens up in Boston the other day, people start shaking their fist at God. Excuse me. That God is the God of good. Satan is the God of evil. And people are shaking their fist at the wrong one. And the reason that is for centuries there's been deception going on. And if you don't seek the truth, you're never going to find out the difference with the deceptions. So let's be really careful we don't try and speak for God or justify what has just happened. And we have to remember, this is a sin-sick world. It's been cursed because of what man did, not what God did. Yet in all of this, God has, don't ever forget this, God has constantly rescued and redeemed us if you care to let him. That is the condition. Stuff happens. You have to understand that. People often get sick, not because God put a curse on them, but they have very poor nutritional and health habits. They're smoking and drinking and doing drugs, and horrible things happen to their bodies. They get drunk, get in a car, and drive into someone and kill people or kill themselves. That's happening not because God caused it. Well, why didn't God stop it? Because God's given every one of us a free will, and if he took that away, there wouldn't be any justice. Wars happen because of hatred and venom in the heart of man, not because God has desired it. People have attacked us before. They attacked us this past Monday, like I said, and they're going to continue to do that until Jesus returns. We've just been blessed in this country that we have had a paucity of this stuff going on from the outside. But we've had murder in this country for a long time. We've had all sorts of things. We've had explosions, people set fires, and all this kind of stuff. It's gone on forever. We're just entering into a new season when people that hate us are coming over here or training people to live here, who lived here, to come back here and do these devastating things. So I'm not saying to get used to it. I'm just saying if the likelihood of these things happening and with ever increasing frequency is pretty high. And we need to be getting closer and closer to the Lord, not blaming him for it. This free will thing that God gave us, it's really dangerous because many will choose against God. But it's absolutely necessary to have free will for justice to be perfect. Loving and serving God must be voluntary. Otherwise, it will not be perfectly just. Rejection can only come from our part, not God's. He will never reject us. Only we can reject him. For sure, though, God often intervenes to assure that the completeness of his perfect plan will happen. But we need to know that he will never leave us nor forsake us. So when asked, where is God when it hurts? We can say he's right here in front of us, asking us which fork in the road we will take when calamity strikes. The road that leads directly to him or the one that goes away from him. So it's not so much what will he do, but much more what will you do when it hurts. And I want to end with Psalm 3. And it says, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. That's exactly what they're saying. Where is God when it hurts? This was written how many thousands of years ago? It's the same thing that people are asking now. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For thou hast smitten all my enemies on the cheek. Thou hast shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Thy blessings be upon thy people. Wow. Read that again when you wonder about the Lord. It's a choice we have. It's okay to ask God, where are you when it hurts? Because we're going to feel that. But don't stay there because that's the devil's playground. these powerful, powerful lessons that we have. And may things that happen, like the tremendous horror of last Monday on the bombings at the Boston Marathon. I mean, I still haven't been able to wrap my head around that. But it does not turn me away from God. It draws me all the closer. He knows what he's doing. And this is a principle that is all throughout the scriptures. If God has not stopped something, then he has a reason for it to occur. Something better is going to come out of it. We may never see what that something better is. But after some of these tragedies, there are many families that get back together again. People just change their attitudes. The people they've been fighting with in their families or their friends, they stop it. These things give us a preciousness of life. When how many people went home and hugged their kids? That 8-year-old kid was killed as an innocent bystander. How many did it cause for them to go back and say, you know, we need to pray. We need to call out on God. We need to change our lives. That one soul in all likelihood is right there at the feet of the Lord right now. So he wins, that little boy. And if God can gather some other souls so that they can win too, by not stopping the death of that young one, then it's a good plan, not a bad plan. And we need to be in prayer for the health and the safety of that precious family and the many others that were hurt. So many were dismembered, and they are going to be scarred, and they will be disabled for life. But you know, in their hearts, I would imagine there isn't disability. Many of them, they said, those that had amputations had many of the same reactions as our soldiers do. They go, you know, I'm alive. I'm going to be okay. And they very often, even the ones up there, what a tribute to the true American spirit, to a good, godly spirit. Take care of that person over there because they're worse off than me. Wow. So where is God when it hurts? He's right there. He's near you. Go to him and receive that comfort and understanding. God bless you.